two people listening. My name is Wes.
And this is Matt.
And this is the Fix It in Postcast. That was almost like the Doug intro.
There you go. We should just, start.
We should just steal intros from other properties, but do it a cappella.
There you go.
Will be the pitch perfect of podcasts. So before I left New Jersey, I made a cell phone sized piece of glass. I don't remember if we were talking about it or if I just thought about it and it'd be cool. Or
so originally it had nothing to do with this film. It was for another film that we were working on, or that I was just telling you maybe about. It was a film that all the technology was basically on thin sheets of glass at this point, and I was explaining to you that they're phones too, that's how it works. So I guess you just took it upon yourself, mm-hmm. after talking, which tends to happen with us, mm-hmm. you were curious and you were like, oh, let me see what I could do, I suppose.
Yeah, and I never really worked with glass before too much, aside from I turned some bottles into cups, basic glassing. So I had a sheet of glass that I had taken from, I think it was an old scanner or something. And I took it and I just was able to cut it and get it, round the edges and make it into a phone shape. And it was good. And I'm like, oh, okay, so that's good. Neat. And then I tried as a proof of concept, taking a short video of it and then putting little tracking dots on it and then putting it into After Effects. Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen this. You should definitely send that to me.
It was bad because I just recorded it on a handheld phone.
But still, It's cool to see that original test that you did, especially because this is something that we're going
to
be doing.
I'll have to find it somewhere. But the tracking dots I made were just little Sharpie dots. And I was thinking I don't want them to be visible. But it doesn't really matter. They could be even the size of a penny, but the size of a pea. That you can have a pea-sized tracking dot in there and it won't matter because you're putting an overlay on it anyway. So you could just cheat the tracking dot away. Once you have it tracked, you can... There are tools in After Effects that let you do line removal. So let's say you're using wires to hoist someone up or to pull the end of a condom filled with blood. you can do the wire removal tool, put the ends of it on the wire, and then it'll just fill in the space. And it works pretty good. You can sometimes it doesn't, but for the most part, because especially if you're doing it really quick, it's good enough. I did that a lot for some of the Tiger Lily stuff.
That's cool.
It's not on the screen long enough for you to notice maybe if a pixel's wrong, and it worked pretty well. And then you set keyframes and you just move the end of it to follow the line. That way it doesn't interact with the blood or anything, and you track it. It's a whole thing. So anyway, you can do that for dots. You can basically have it remove fiducial markers. So I put little Sharpie dots, but it was too hard to track the Sharpie dots when I'm moving it and I'm the background was and then there was glare. And
well, that's the whole thing too. You got to be careful what backdrop, because it's a piece of glass.
Yes.
You got to be careful what backdrop you're putting that on.
Yeah.
And then even if you're putting an overlay on it, you got to think that overlay is technically not going to be completely solid, because if it's on a piece of glass, it's going to be kind of translucent.
Yeah. So when you're doing that, what I found, and I never tested it, but I can always do another test and mess around with it. If you put a pea size markers on the corners that are visible the entire time, you can do 3D tracking on it where it will scale and skew it properly as long as you can see all of the tracking stuff at the same time. It gets fishy when some of the tracking stuff becomes obscured for a prolonged period of time, because you could just put one before, put one after, and it'll fill in the keyframes of where it thinks it'll go in between those times. And as long as you have three of the four markers going, it won't mess up too badly. I was testing that and it more or less worked, but the tracking on it was just too difficult with what I did. And I just kind of like, I put it aside. And then before we left, I'm like, oh, by the way, I have this thing that I made. So then you said, oh, do you think you can make a couple more of them? And I was like, sure. So in this time, instead of using glass, I'm using something a little more forgiving, acrylic. I started working on them and I figured out how to get the acrylic. Really, you don't really cut it. You like score it and then you break it. And then I did the fine work on it. I took some like really fine sandpaper and I just ground all the sides flat. And then I put the beveling on the edges to make it like rounded corners.
Cool.
So they're not perfect.
Gotcha.
You still have the glass one, which I'm assuming you didn't break yet.
We do have the glass one. And, you know, the glass one's great. It's just I didn't want to take any chances.
Yeah.
You know, we're on set.
Yeah, yeah.
If somebody drops it, it's glass. Yeah. You know, that's it. Screwed. It's gone. Yeah. We're done with it. You know,
acrylic is still fragile. You could drop it, though.
Of course. But you also made a few.
Yeah, I made two of them. All that to say that I shipped out the acrylic, you know, glass phone things. And I had to go through PayPal. PayPal has a thing where you print out labels and you get a discount by going through them. So you can print out labels through post office or UPS. And when I did it through them, it was like $32 to ship it next day. When I did it directly through the UPS website, it was $60.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. It was $62 to do next day air saver. Same thing. Everything exactly the same. It just cost twice as much.
That's crazy ridiculous.
If I did it next day AM, so you'd get it like tomorrow morning, then it would be like 60 something. That was my adventure for today.
Yeah, so I mean, everything's going spectacularly well. We had a few hiccups, but ultimately we are trucking along towards our first shoot days coming up this weekend, 9/7 and 9/8. We're shooting in Jersey City the first day and Brooklyn in the second. Everyone's ready to go. We're all super excited on the home front. On the Florida bound side, though, I wanted to talk a little bit about visual effects because, you know, I'm sure a lot of people don't realize. And I mean, you and I have talked about it a little bit through this podcast. It doesn't start in post-production. It starts during production, maybe even pre-production. And I mean, we're right here in pre-production, literally going to start talking about it because you have to prep your crew for how these things are going to be shot. You have to prep your actors for how they're going to be shot. And it's like you're seeing a visual that's not actually there. You know, your cinematographer and your director have to know, okay, this is green, but this is what it's really going to look like, you know? And sometimes from what I've heard, sometimes they have visual cues on set. Like you can do a little bit of chroma on the backside so that they can see some sort of visuals of what's going on. But it really all depends on the situation. We're at a very, very low budget. So we're not doing anything like that. There's not going to be any visuals on set. We are just going from our own minds and from the information that we're going to talk about. So the first shoot day, like I said, is in Jersey City, and we're just going to go through some of the shots here that we're going to need visual effects in. I just want to establish what we will need to do on set. I figured it would be easiest to do this over the podcast because, again, you know, you get a little bit of how this works and what you as the visual effects editor is going to have to do in post.
I will fix it in post.
Ah, there it is. And that's a wrap, everybody.
All right.
In our first scene, it's taking place in a gazebo in Jersey City that looks out onto Hoboken, which is down below, and then you can see the New York skyline further out from that. So that's where we're starting on Saturday. Now, if you look through the shots,
we're starting with 3-1.
Yes. Then we have the master, long shot, wide of Hilt and Bard in gazebo. So this will need an effect. We're going to keep this locked off because it's literally going to be the master. You're going to get all the visuals. Yeah, this would be a master locked off. They'll play through the whole scene in this shot. But again, so we're going to have it locked off. You know, one of the big things, just to reiterate what I want to do here is, you know, maybe there'll be some changes to the overarching backdrops or anything like that in this scene. So, I mean, ultimately, I guess maybe I didn't think about it like this until now. But if we do anything to the backdrop, any movement's going to be an issue. Let's say if we jump back to 3-1, I said, yeah, I want to manipulate the background. You know, whether we take it out and Photoshop it or whatever the case, what is capable of being done there since that's going to be a pullout?
You want to manipulate the background of the pullout with the gazebo?
Correct. Let's say we did.
What's behind it? What do you want behind it?
My whole thought was if we see a bit of decay in the city, you know, add some particle effects, you know, a fog or whatever the case is.
Would it be easier to just like take the background and then we'll just chroma out the entire background and then put in the plate behind it?
In an ideal world, world, maybe, but that's definitely not going to happen.
Right, right. These are the ways that we can do that. The best way involves me not having to roto out each person.
Sure.
Now, what I could do is, I mean, if they're coming from like a further distance, whatever, I can roto out. I can do like a rough roto. And then as long as we don't screw around, I can alter the things in the background or add like a mist or a haze or like smoke coming out of a building or like debris. As long as I have decent enough tracking. If it's locked off, then I'll have a much easier time tracking because there's still going to be like minuscule movement in the background just because of how camera sensors pick up images.
Sure.
And then you'll have just kind of floating stuff. I can essentially isolate the background plate. If I'm trying to overlay something on top of it, that's when it gets a little sketchy because now I am essentially having to create a background plate and roto out each individual thing. If I'm using the background that's there and then just putting like particle effects here so it looks like stuff's falling off of this building or water is pouring out of like this window or like smoke's coming out of this area, then that is a little easier, especially if it's locked off.
Well, of course. The locked off shots, I figure you can almost manipulate anything in the shots as long as it's not the moving subject.
Right.
Unless we can track it.
It's just so much harder.
Yeah, of course.
If the person's coming in from the background, then you need to work on rotoing out that person, and this is why they invented chroma green.
Yeah,
of course. But you can mess around with a lot of stuff if you're just adding effects on a locked off shot.
Yeah.
That I'm not too worried about. Okay, so I see what you're saying. Yeah, I could work with that. Yeah. Take a picture of where you want the shot to be, where they're like standing with the skyline in the background. Is that basically where you want the shot?
Yeah, pretty much most of the scene will take place, you know, about where they are.
Yeah.
Where, you know, I had Rob and Jackie standing as placeholders on the set, pretty much where the scene will take place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll move around slightly, but everything's going to be locked off except that opening shot, 3-1, would be a pullout. And it's unfortunately not something we can do in post because it's going to be about a medium on Bard. This will be on a gimbal and then it will pull out to the stairs. So I don't know if you see how the stairs lead up to the gazebo.
Yes.
Hilt will be standing on the stairs.
But if you're just doing like little things, like a smoke effect, adding atmospheric things, little particle effects and stuff in the background, that's easy.
Yeah. And you know, this may not be something we desperately need to do. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all at the moment, it's kind of like, let's see what we can do.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So ultimately, yeah. So this is that set and you'll get more views of the city once we get into the gazebo anyway, because as you see the way it's set up, you don't really see the city from the ground level. You can't really see much of it if you're on the stairs of the gazebo.
Right.
Which the master shot will be from that angle. The thing that we need to focus on in that, and again, that's locked off. So if I'm understanding this correctly, so Bard, he has two hacks on his arms.
Okay.
On his left, he will have this life hack, which is basically like how we were talking about the phone earlier.
Like an overlay on his arm.
Yeah, he has this ability built into his arm. His other arm is bandaged up because he just got this new hack, which is this projection that will basically
put out like a projection in front of him.
More so around, which may even be easier for you. We were going to put tracking dots on his left arm, on his arm bare because he doesn't have anything there, and then on the ace bandage that will be around his right arm.
Okay.
Because that's where the projection hack will be coming out of the ace bandage, you know what I mean? Because he just, he got this new hack and it's, you know, bandaged up. That hack, my whole thought process there was it envelops them. Actually, you know what a great visual aid is? If you remember in The Force Awakens, that map that comes up, it's the map of where Luke Skywalker is that's incomplete, but specifically in the scene where Han Solo is shown the map.
Okay.
Do you remember on the Millennium Falcon?
Yeah.
Okay. So the way that it envelops him and it's kind of like in front of him and whatever, this is kind of how I want this, but I want them more like in a bubble. When this projection comes up, it's more like a hologram, I guess, in a way. That's what I'm ultimately looking for. And we'll worry about what the visuals are in that. The only thing that would need to be tracked in this is Bard will be walking around within the projection and the light would be, as a projector is, hardest at the source. So the tracking dots would be there for you to track where that hard light would be coming from. You know what I mean?
So the projection around them is just going to be like overlaid on the scenery.
Right. So it's static.
Is it going to be locked off?
Yeah. The shots where you will see the projection will be locked off. So 3-2, which is the master,
yeah,
you'll see the the whole projection and them standing within it. And then you have 3-3, 3-4. Those are over the shoulders of each character. 3-5 is a two shot of them. Those are the four shots that will have this projection, because after 3-5, we go into the next part of the scene, which doesn't have anything to do with that.
Okay. What's the like diameter of the bubble?
Let's say the size of the gazebo.
Okay. So we're just going to make it the gazebo. Is it going to extend past the bars?
Yes.
Okay.
But it's going to be locked off.
So we have to mask off the bars. And
I suppose. But again, we can play around with it too. However, it would work without it looking silly, I guess.
So for this, we just need a mask for anything that's going to be in the foreground of the projection.
For the over the shoulders and the two shot, yes. But the master, you're going to see from outside the bubble. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So yes, there'll be a couple shots where the projection is from the outside, or there'll be one shot where the projection is from the outside, and then there's one shot where the projections you're inside with them.
All right, so just like some Blender stuff, we're gonna have to basically make a 3D sphere and then have elements along the inside of that sphere and then import it into After Effects and just work it from there.
Right. Originally, my whole thought was when this image comes up, I assumed we'd film footage of this like lush environment, whether I find like a waterfall and some greenery or something like that, and that would be what comes up. It's the first thing that comes on when the projection turns on. So think of it like this is the startup of the operating system when you first turn it on, you know? So it shows this lush environment and it's like,
you know, it'd be cool to find some, you know how people do like the 3D bubble thing that like you do on your phone where you take a photo all around you. You basically go around yourself like aiming low, and then your phone says, okay, now do the same thing, spin around, you know, middle and then high, and you basically make a photo bubble of where you are. So when someone opens it on their phone, they can like move their phone around and look around and they'll see like where you are.
Okay, that could work too, as long as it's a lush looking environment that we can play off. And the one thing that will have to be animated within the bubble is the developer of this biohack, his logo appears like in overlaid of this video that comes up. They look at this, he's amazed, and then he shuts it off and they move on with the scene.
Okay.
And then we move on to 3-7 and 3-8. This is her device now. So that's what it's going to focus on.
This is the glass phone thing?
Correct. Got it. Because Hilt doesn't have any hacks, so she's carrying around this phone. So she pulls it out from inside her pocket, and then she has it in her hand for a little while. He has it in his hand, whatever the case is. But we already know we need to put tracking marks on the device. And as long as the device is being held in an up and down, left and right fashion, and not in a 3D fashion, you just can't go in circular motions or anything like that.
Why? What do you mean?
I'm asking you.
When you're showing a thing of a person holding it, it would be awesome if you didn't occlude the fiducial markers. That would be great. Then you should be able to move it in whatever way you want, and it should be able to translate it.
You're saying as long as the markers are able to be seen, you can even move it in a 3D space.
Yeah. It'll scale and translate the image. It shouldn't be a problem.
All right. So ultimately, as long as we have markers on there, we can pretty much do anything we want with that phone, except obviously like...
Yeah, it really...
I couldn't even think of anything crazy.
There's a really simple tracking where you track the points in like a rectangle, and that way it keeps the right aspect ratio, and then it'll automatically like skew and distort it for how what angle it's going at. So that's not the problem. The problem is losing tracking markers. Then the only thing you have to worry about is any part that the hand is occluding the device.
Yeah, like when they're using their thumb.
Yeah. So then those will have to be like rotored and masked, whatever. But that's not a huge deal. That's right. All possible.
Okay.
That's like the least big deal out of the whole thing. As long as the tracking markers are there and I can follow them, it can be done. And then I can get rid of the fiducial markers in post. I mean, that's the easy part, especially with the overlay on top. You won't notice it.
Right. And now on the design side of that. So, you know, whatever... You tracked it, you set it for overlay.
I could put whatever video you want on there.
Well, yes. So that's what I was getting at. So ultimately what we do is we design some sort of operating system, or you recommended maybe looking for one and seeing if we can use it or whatever the case. But I actually may have found somebody that could do some graphic design on this, so they may be able to develop one.
If you get the elements for it and you have it together in like a PSD with all of the elements, I can throw it into After Effects and then animate the elements.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, that's really easy. I mean, I did it back when, you know, people used Flash to do that, and you're using like ActionScript. Pretty much all of that was translated over into After Effects because it's a useful animation tool. When I go to edit a video, I put it in After Effects, not Premiere, because it's just I'm more used to that, and you can do fun things with it. But for that, yeah, you can take elements, and you're basically just setting keyframes for the elements and saying where to go. Most of that stuff, like the light effects, whatever, are just like built-in tools with After Effects, so you don't have to do anything crazy with.
Gotcha. So moving on from that scene, that pretty much covers everything that happens. Just to reiterate, we have the globe, the god rays, his hack on his arm, and then the glass, which the glass and the hack on his arm are pretty much the same thing.
Pretty much the same thing. Keep the fiducial markers around. Yeah. It should be fine.
All right. So moving on, then we're into scene 4 now. In scene 4, we have these bodyguards, okay? They scan them and shut down their hacks before they go into this place. They're not allowed to have their hacks active when they go in.
A fan laser thing that like goes over everything?
Yeah, pretty much. But, again, it comes out of their arm. So think of like they bring their arm in front of them. They do some typing or whatever on their arm. And then on the backside of their forearm, you'd see this, again, god rays come out and then scan the subject in front of them and then disappear after that. Think of like you have these god rays come out, right?
Mm-hmm.
This one I just assumed would be red.
Yeah. So did I. We're on the same page color-wise here.
Wow, look at that.
Blue for the projections, red for the lasers.
Yeah. So they come out, okay? And then let's say there's just one solid, like, red bar, you know, obviously part of the projection, that goes up and down their body, and that's it. It doesn't need to envelop them.
No, not envelop, but it's the way that the light would hit them, it's going to show up on the parts of their body that are closer to the camera at a different height than the things that are lower, so it won't make a completely flat line. I'm thinking of it way in too much detail for something that no one is ever going to notice. I'll figure it out.
Okay, sounds good. That's about it for that scene. There's really no other visual effects in there. If you see down on 8-1, this should be very simple, and it's something that I think we discussed already, but it would be a locked off shot of the front of this surgeon's office that she's going to.
Okay, so Dr. Grasner's surgery exterior.
Yeah.
Switch out the sign.
Yep, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, that's fine.
And honestly, what I love about this little sign here is that little like caricature on it. You see how it's the two people? Yeah. It would be awesome if we can try and design something simple like that to show like this guy's a biohack surgeon and kind of like a play off of this sign that's here. You know what I mean?
I get what you're saying.
And literally the picture that you're seeing here
is going to be the shot.
Yeah, pretty much. I may even do two, one wide like this and then one like kind of focused on the sign. You still see her pass underneath it, but focused on the sign. Either way, they're going to be locked off.
We could do like fun things with it where like we can make like the sign flicker.
Yeah, exactly. See, that would be really cool. On top of that too, like if we meld those two shots together, like we slowly pull it out of the sign, you have it flicker a little bit, and then we cut to the wide and it's still slowly pulling out while she's walking in.
You could do a lot of that with like a locked off shot and then just pull it out in post. That makes the tracking a lot simpler.
Sure.
Either way, it's not a very difficult track with a simple like pull out. The thing is, when you're doing stuff like that, it's the little motions that you don't realize that you're doing, and then you're just zigzagging around because no one is holding him perfectly still.
Yeah, of course.
Even with that, it's not difficult.
Yeah. And last here, as you see, 2-1 is a long shot of the apartment building that she comes out of. That we really don't need anything done to. But for the rest of the day after that, we're going to be doing B-roll throughout Jersey City. So
yeah,
there are certain locations that we definitely will be going to. I'm going to try and find as many options as I can get for stuff like that, just so that we can add in world building throughout the film. You know, her walking through the streets, and we can add, signage for like biohacking ads and things like that. Mm-hmm. And that's obviously stuff I'm going to wind up shooting separately. But as long as, again, things are locked off, we can pretty much overlay anything on there and add whatever camera movements we want.
Locking it off makes it a lot easier. If you had something you're like, oh, I really like this and I want to see if I can add something, I could try.
Yeah.
Something that we can play around with is having like projection ads in front of the billboards, or like have like a drone flying around.
Sure. See, anything that we can sell this world would be really cool. And you know, even I was just thinking about this, and they kind of have this today, but you know, like it would be cool if we have like a projection and like a going through like signs. If I find like a train, not a train, a bus stop or something like that, maybe she walks by a bus stop and you know how they have the glass
as
walls
she walks
there.
By it, it like turns on and...
Yeah. And it's like, hey, we know you're blah, blah, blah. It kind of like, are you familiar with Minority Report?
Yes, of course. Where like, you know, he walks by and he has the different guy's eye in there. It's like, Mr. Yamagashi.
Right. Yes, exactly. So yeah, you know, so we could do some cool stuff like that. But as long as we have these shots locked off, you and I can go over, basically, it's going to be almost like doing cinematography in post, because we're going to have to do some shots that we may want to do. And, you know, it does play a role too in production, because my cinematographer and I can say, hey, in reality, this is how this shot will look. But we need to take this whole building, or we need to take a part of this building, as long as it has that in it, you know, whatever the case. Because if you're looking at the billboard picture, I took a picture of the whole building. Building itself, I think, looks awesome, and I would love to do a shot in front of it anyway. But it would be cool if we kind of were able to, like, you know, zoom in a little bit, a slow zoom in or slow zoom out, whatever the case is, as long as we have options, you know. Let's be realistic here, you know, at the extreme. Let's talk about the extreme. So we're shooting 4K. How far, you know, taking a look at this image here, I know that our people that are listening don't really have a visual aid, but, you know, we have a whole building here. And then on the top right corner, we have this billboard. Let's say I wanted you to zoom all the way in on that billboard. That's obviously an extreme thing that probably will degrade the image quality tremendously. Tell me, how far can we go with this?
So imagine you're looking at a 4K image. If you take a quarter of it, just a quarter of the picture, and like zoom into that top right of the picture to about like a quarter of the size of the entire frame, that would still be 1080.
Yeah, because 4K, you can divide this into four quadrants, basically, if you're talking 1080.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah. So you still have decent quality even at a quarter of the resolution.
Right.
So you can basically get four times magnification. I'm sure there's some weird math thing that I'm wrong about in there, but you can essentially get four times magnification and still have like a decent quality picture.
Right.
You could theoretically get a decent shot of the billboard.
Yeah.
And then of course you could add extra stuff if you're doing like a projection billboard and having like stuff come out from it. You could essentially make the billboard bigger.
And then of course that stuff would be in 4K in itself anyway.
Yeah.
If you think about it. So the overlays would be 4K.
Exactly. And you're not really thinking about the background and the, because you're going to be looking at you're going to be pulling the focus away from it.
Right.
As long as it's all in focus.
Yeah.
I don't see how it could be a problem. If it's out of focus and you're zooming in and then you have to upsample, then it's going to get shitty.
Yeah. Again, it's more of a curiosity. Like, you know, obviously we probably won't be going to those extremes, but at the same time, it's nice to know how extreme we can go with the situation, you know?
If you can, like, throw it on the gimbal and then control the zoom remotely so that it's, you know, you reduce the amount of camera shake.
Yeah.
I would do both. I would do one that's, like, you do it in camera on the gimbal and see if you can, like, do a pullout. If you could do something like that, we can mess around with it. I could do both ways, and then we'll just pick the one that looks better.
Yeah.
It's better to have more and not need it than to need it and not have it.
Sure. And since you mentioned it, so we're talking about a gimbal. So where we can 100% lock off every piece of B-roll we get. If we're using a gimbal, what kind of options do we have there?
All right. So the biggest problem to tracking is the camera shake that you get, the minuscule camera shake that you don't notice, but it's happening.
Yeah.
When you're looking at like tracking a handful of pixels as like your fiducial marker in that, that's when it gets really time consuming, and then you wind up like going off the rails and then stuff looks like it's floating.
Right.
If you can avoid the camera shake and just have smooth movements between things, it makes things a lot better.
We can always get static shots very easy to set up. We are shooting with 2A7 III anyway.
2A7 III. Look at you.
Yeah, I know. Stepping things up. My assistant camera, he and I bought A7 III together. We're going to be probably shooting some things aside from this movie together. So
yeah,
he wanted to grab this body too. So we're going to have my A7 III as the main camera on our cinema rig with the 28 to 75 millimeter zoom on there. Mm-hmm. And then he's going to have his on the gimbal with the 17 to 28 zoom on there.
Okay.
We'll always have both set up throughout the day.
So then do both.
Exactly. That's pretty much what I was alluding to.
Yeah. Do both. And then we'll see what works better.
The more open we are and the more flat we're shooting, the less issues we're going to have, especially if we're doing a landscape shot with focus.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally agree.
Yeah. So moving on from that, that's pretty much everything for day one. If we move on to day two, which is a lot simpler, you don't really have to worry about anything on the interior side because that's all set dressing.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that I will say is she's using a soldering tool. And we're obviously not going to have it on. She's not actually going to be really soldering anything, but she's going to be soldering, air quotes, because nobody can see this, a motherboard of some sort or some sort of chip. And obviously, very simple. It's going to be mostly locked off, too. There's not going to be really any shots except that first opening shot that's movement.
Mm-hmm.
But everything else is going to be locked off.
So you just need a little like smoke coming off the soldering iron?
Yeah, pretty much.
I could do smoke.
Yeah, I know. I've seen.
Yeah, that worked really well.
Yeah.
That's all particle effects. The particle effects thing built into After Effects is ridiculously simple and awesome. You'd be like, all right, particle size this. I want it to be going up, or I want it to be affected by gravity. I want it to go in this direction, and I want it to do this with the light. I want it to be this color. So easy.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to make something a little more complicated, more for a stylistic choice here. So she's wearing goggles, okay?
Uh-huh.
The goggles, I want them to basically be so crispy, reflective that you can see what she's working on in these goggles.
Okay.
Again, it's going to be locked off. Can we do that?
As long as there is some type of fiducial marker on the goggles.
Okay, awesome.
One thing that we have to worry about here is that if she turns to look away,
mm-hmm.
you have to think that is going to be the reflection of what's in front of her.
Correct. But you don't have to worry about that because her direction is she's literally looking down at this. The only thing that you're going to have to worry about, which again is really something we have to do, she's going to obviously lift the goggles and they're then going to rest on her like forehead, but they're going to be so high up that it doesn't matter. You won't see what's in the goggles anymore.
Do you see her lifting the goggles?
Of course. But this is the thing. So if she's lifting it, we can shoot it in a way where it lifts, I guess, like we lift the camera movement away from her, you know? And then on top of that, this scene is lit very dark. So it's literally one light shining on what she's doing.
So when they aren't pointed at what she's looking at, it's just going to be black.
Exactly. So you won't see what's in the goggles past when they're moved. You know what I mean? So it's all about timing really at that point. I don't think there'll be an issue.
The simplest option is just put mirrors.
Oh yeah, that's not the simplest option because you'll see the camera, sir.
No, you won't.
Yeah, you will.
Not if you do it correctly.
That's not how the world works. Anyway, so those would be about the only two things: the smoke off the soldering tool, and then her goggles.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else in this is practical set dressing. Trust me, Wesley, you'll be missed not being on set. This is going to be the first time we're shooting something since Legacy of Snakes and you're not here. So
yeah, I know. 1,000 miles away.
Anyway, so the next thing that we're doing on this day is we're shooting in a flea market. It's called Artists and Fleas in Brooklyn. Yeah, so this is going to be the interior of this marketplace. You and I have discussed this a little bit too. Obviously, it's a real flea market. So we don't have control over what they're selling or what the environment exactly looks like. We purposely chose this one because it's interior. It has kind of like the hanging lights that I'm looking for. So there'll be really nice bokeh balls everywhere and whatever the case is. That's what I'm looking for in this scene. And I've already discussed with my cinematographer, Lane, that we're going to really put the focus on the main character. So she'll be pretty much in focus most of the time. But I did tell him, hey, if we see something that may work for this world, shoot it. Shoot her looking at it, whatever the case is. Let's get it anyway. Again, it all comes down to kind of like improvisational manipulation.
Yeah.
I'm going to coin that. I'm going to write that down because that actually sounded awesome. What I mean by improvisational manipulation is we will take a bunch of random B-roll of this flea market and I will send it to you and I will say, hey, I really like this shot, but can we add this to it? And ultimately, it would be kind of like the B-roll that we shot for the exterior. You're taking something that's not futuristic and possibly making it futuristic. Whether she picks up a jewelry box and we're like, she opens that. Can we add something else inside there? I mean, obviously, yeah. It's going to be a little harder because we're not going to be able to put tracking marks on all this stuff. But if it's possible, let's try it out and see if we could throw something else in, you know?
Yeah, why not? We'll just throw it at the wall and see what happens. Did you have pictures of the flea market?
I don't, but you could look it up. We actually have never been there.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we were still kind of looking into what flea market we wanted to use if we were going to do that, because we tossed around some ideas of, hey, maybe there's a sci-fi convention going on and we could get tickets to go to that and have her walk around there. But unfortunately, just no conventions were really popping out at us. Nothing that would work for what we wanted, you know? Like, we'd really need like sci-fi or a horror convention or maybe like a comic convention where people are walking around in crazy costumes, you know, which could easily be sold if it's focused on her and you see like a couple people walk by and you can't really see what they're wearing, but you could tell they're wearing something different.
The one that you look at, the Artisan Fleas, that's what that is. Is that the one in Soho, Chelsea?
Williamsburg?
Okay.
Yeah, that's the one that's inside in Brooklyn, because we're shooting in Brooklyn on Sunday.
Okay, I see the hanging lights.
Yeah. It's exactly what I was looking for, which is fantastic, because I'll tell you, man, I love locations.
Yeah.
I'm not very fond of building sets. It's not something I've really ever done.
Because they're not lived in.
Exactly. They don't have a feeling of life. You know, you have to build the life into it. And unfortunately, putting life into something means money. However, like, for instance, we did our rehearsal in the Jersey Shore Arts Center. They have really nice spaces. And I definitely recommend, if anyone needs to do a rehearsal there, they're very cheap and friendly. Don't do short notice like I did, but they did help me out and accommodated me very quickly and nicely. But anyway, down where they had us, we were in the basement. But oh my God, just being down there, that environment, just, I immediately said to my stunt choreographer, he shoots a lot of horror and comic book fan films, things like that, and I looked at him and I was like, we need to shoot a horror movie down here, because this place is just amazing. And like you said, like, it's lived in. You can feel like something's been here. You can do something with this space, you know?
Yeah.
And I've never done it before, and I really need to. I've never written a script around a location, and I really would like to do that one day, because I've run into so many awesome places that I really should hone in on one of them and do something like that. And the reason why I brought it up is because, like you said, you know, sets don't feel lived in. So like, this place to me, just I felt like, oh my God, I could write a great story just around this basement.
Yeah.
Because it had like interwoven like hallways and like little rooms. It had this weird stretch of like yellow painted on the floor that led you to where the rehearsal space was that we were using. And like, the rehearsal space, it was great. It was a nice little space, but at the same time, it was very creepy. If it was lit properly, you could make a real creepy environment.
Mm-hmm.
All I thought was like, you know, a crazed insane asylum, or maybe like a bunker or something like that. Something along the lines of that would work real well in a post-apocalyptic type world or whatever the case is. But it was a pretty cool environment.
A location has a sort of soul of its own that if you can harness it to kind of like tell its story, I'm totally with you. It's its own thing. It tells part of the story for you.
Of course.
You just have to set a couple chess pieces in motion, and then the location can fill in the rest.
Well, you and I know this firsthand too, because you helped me location scout Fort Hancock, where we shot Legacy of Snakes.
Without permission of the federal government.
Of course. But, you know, I mean, hey, we tried to get through the red tape to shoot at that place, and red tape is red tape, and ultimately, we loved it so much, and we knew it was going to make or break that film because it was such a good location, and like you said, it spoke more to the script than the script itself.
It had its own history.
Exactly.
It was telling a story, and you just have to put the little nudges here and there, and then it tells your story.
And ultimately, we did. We shot it guerrilla, and luckily, knock on wood, I don't know why I'm knocking on wood, the movie shot, but we had no issues with it, and it was amazing. And it was probably one of my favorite days on location shooting somewhere, because there was a fire under our asses because we didn't want to get caught, and everyone was on their A game. Like, okay, this is how we need to do it. We freaking freaking blocked a fight there, you know, like all in like a couple hours at the most. I don't even think it was that long.
Yeah,
we did it and it was successful, and it's a great scene in the movie, and it does sell. The location sells it. And Rob, even our producer who's producing this, Robert Mananese, he even was able to get some photos of me playing Solid Snake that I used for posters. Like, it's just mind-blowing that we were able to do all that day. And it was great. It was great. One of my favorite times on set. I think that's pretty much it. That definitely covers pretty much everything we need to go over for this weekend. And I am super excited to finally have footage, to finally play around with this thing.
Yeah.
The only other thing that I guess that I ask is, do we send you footage prior to color correcting, or do we send you footage when that's done?
Color correct first. That way, when I have to match colors to do something, they don't get wonky when you color correct later. I'll match it to whatever it's color corrected to. That helps me out, because if sometimes shit doesn't look right.
Yeah.
If you want, you could send me a sample and we could try one that looks how it looks before and after, and I can apply the same effects to the same shot and we'll see what happens. But I think it would be better if we color correct first, because then I can screw around with stuff and then make it look realistic for that environment. Because if I make something look realistic for that environment and then you change that environment, even if you're changing that with it, it might not match up. That's my preference, but we could work it however way you want.
Hey, whatever works. The only thing that sucks is, who knows when we'll actually get to do VFX then.
Yeah.
However, like you said, it would be nice to see some samples, so I'll definitely be sending you some stuff. I think that pretty much wraps this up. I'm super excited for this weekend. I hope all of the other nobody listening to this is excited as well. Maybe my cast and crew, maybe they're listening to this because they want to know all the crazy things we talked about.
Once it's finished, I'm excited to help record the director's commentary.
Oh, yeah.
This is all just practice for the director's commentary on the movie.
You are so right. But one of us will have to fly to one of us.
All right. We'll figure it out.
We'll fix it in post.
Yeah.
And on that note, have a good night, all. I'm Matt.
I'm Wes.
And this is the Fix It in Postcast.